Welcome. You've tuned into the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy all week. The toughest part about coming on the air today was deciding where to start. There's so much going on today, so many stories I want to talk about. I'm going to start with just a couple of announcements, a couple of things going on. First of which, this weekend, this Saturday, May 12th, U.S. Post Office is organizing its yearly food drive. You should be getting a card in the mail from your post office looking for non-perishable food goods. They distribute them to local food banks and soup kitchens in your neighborhood. So do look out for the United States Post Office this Saturday. You'll get a little card in the mail and a little bag. Do what you can, folks. Fill that thing up. It's a great event, and they do a great job every year pulling it together, so do participate in that one. Also want to let you know, I mentioned this at the end of yesterday's program, but our buddy Sarge from Mississippi, I'm sure most of the listeners to this program know who I'm talking about. Sarge from Mississippi is now here in Phoenix. He is Sarge of Phoenix. Sarge lives here in Phoenix now, is just getting settled in, and has a program that airs every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. on the East Coast. Check it out on the stream, and the podcasts are up and running, too, at NovaMradio.com. Check that out. So many stories to start with. I want to start with this one. Kansas is where we're going to start the program today. Governor Kathleen Sebelius yesterday made this statement at a press conference. Am I up here?
50% of our trucks are gone. Our front loaders are gone. We're missing Humvees that move people in and out. And we can't borrow them from other states because their equipment is gone. So it really is a huge issue for states across this country to respond to disasters like this.
Again, something pretty obvious. You know, pretty obvious. The National Guard is not there, and they took all their equipment with them. 60% of their equipment and 60% of their guard troops are not there to respond to a crisis in Kansas. Here's a report that ran on CNN.
To recover in Greensburg, tons of debris will have to be cleared away. Some crucial first responders, National Guard units, are being hampered in this effort. And officials say troop strength is not the problem.
We need trucks. We are missing Humvees. We're missing all kinds of equipment that could help us respond to this kind of emergency.
Kansas National Guard officials tell us they now have less than half the equipment allocated to them by the U.S. National Guard Bureau, and they've been dealing with the shortfall for years.
We weren't fully equipped with all the resources we need before the war started, so that and the fact we went with a bunch of our forces to Iraq and Afghanistan just further depleted us.
Kansas is by no means alone. Listen to this finding by a commission reporting on the National Guard's ability to respond to disasters at home.
The National Guard, for the units that remain here in the continental United States, 88% of those units are not ready due to equipment deficiencies.
Last month, the top National Guard official admitted the Army branch of his force is, quote, woefully under-equipped. But he also pledged,
I will deliver and ensure that the Adjutant General has the equipment and the plans that they need to be able to respond.
Kansas National Guard officials tell us they can manage this disaster with the equipment they have, and the shortage has had no effect on deaths or injuries in Greensburg. But
if we had another big storm by now, we'd be hard-pressed to cover that.
And they may be hard-pressed soon. Weather officials tell us not only are we in the peak month for tornado season, but storm systems have just caused flash flooding and evacuations in Topeka and the Kansas City area. Wolf.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Sounds vaguely familiar. A part of the country distressed by weather. And the National Guard is deployed in Bush's folly in Iraq, in Bush's occupation, Bush's illegal war and occupation of the sovereign nation of Iraq. And a Democratic governor steps up and says, hey, I don't have what I need. So what does the White House do? Does the White House rush to get them the equipment they need to help those people in jeopardy? To help begin rebuilding those lives in Greensburg, Kansas? No. This morning, Secretary Tony Snow blamed Governor Kathleen Sebelius for the shortages, saying he was not aware of any prior complaints by the governor about the equipment. Again, reminiscent of the way Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco was treated after the federal government botched response to Katrina. Here's to quote Snow directly. If you don't request it, you're not going to get it. As far as we know, the only thing the governor has requested are FM radios. There have been no requests to the National Guard for heavy equipment, but we are eager to provide what Kansas needs. But again, there are also, you have to go through the process of making the request first. Well, apparently, Governor Sebelius has made a number of requests, starting December 30th, 2005. Sebelius writes to Donald Rumsfeld requesting new equipment. In quotes, the Guard was critical to responding to recent blizzards and floods in Kansas, yet its ability to respond to similar situation is being diminished by the lack of equipment, wrote Sebelius. Included with her letter was a list of equipment Kansas had lost to the Iraq War, December 30th, 2005. January 23, 2006, Sebelius personally urges Bush to increase National Guard funding. In a one-hour motorcade ride in Kansas with Bush, in person, Sebelius expressed concern about a reduction of National Guard troop strength in its next budget. Bush assured her he was dealing with the shortages. This comes to us from the Topeka Capital Journal and the Kansas City Star, both reported it. June 28th. 2006, Sebelius sends Army Secretary list of equipment lost in the war. In a meeting with Army Secretary Francis J. Harvey, Governor Sebelius told Harvey that the state had lost about $140 million in National Guard equipment to the Iraq War. Her office then sent him a list of the lost equipment. September 2006, Sebelius lobbies for replacement of National Guard equipment sent to Iraq. Kansas congressional delegation, Sebelius and governors from around the country have been lobbying the Pentagon for increased funding to replace National Guard equipment that has been left in Iraq or damaged beyond repair after repeated use in the war. February 27, 2007, Sebelius pushes White House and Congress for more funding. Now the Guard needs Washington help, Sebelius said in a press conference on Capitol Hill. The President and Congress need to step up to the plate and give our Guard members the support they deserve. And there is Tony Snow going out there today and saying she never requested anything from us. All she asked for was FM radios. This is so eerily reminiscent of what we saw happen in Katrina. This administration, staffed with incompetence, graduates of a Regent University and whatever cousin of whatever person who lined Bush's campaign committee's pockets, get some high-ranking job that they are not equipped to handle. And once again, the federal government fails its citizens, the people who pay the very taxes to support this government. And what do they get? Do they get aid rushed to them? They have people stepping up trying to do the best they can? No. Tony Snow goes out in public and tries to blame it on the governor. When I just read to you six specific instances where the governor petitioned Rumsfeld, the Pentagon, George Bush directly, in a motorcade, sat next to the man and told him the National Guard was not prepared in her state. And now we see the evidence of that. Now we see what this has wrought. How many more times does this have to happen in this country? And who are these idiot 28% people who still support this president at this point? How many times does this scene have to play out? Poll just came out. 39% of Americans favor impeachment today. 39%. That's a good start. That's a very good start. And there's lots of actions you can take to push that ball forward. Can this country survive another 20 months of the Bush presidency? Every day, I doubt it more and more. I'm going to open up the phones here on 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. If you're listening to us on the Nova M Radio Network, my name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. We're going to do caller-driven again, just like we did last night. Keep the phone lines open for the whole show. Hope to hear from you. We'll be right back. Not fast enough for me, folks. We have to make this change quicker. We cannot survive another 20 months of this administration. Just a real short clip, and I'll get right back on the phones. This is John Koppelmeyer, a former regional director of FEMA. The question was, have we learned nothing of the lessons in Katrina?
Understanding that there are a number of different priorities of the administration, but it's difficult to understand how the example of Katrina could not have been taken into account with regard to the availability of this kind of a resource to the states. I'm somewhat at a loss by this.
There's about an eight-second pause before he even started his answer. Left that out of it because he's just so stunned. A guy who was a regional director for FEMA realizing that they've done nothing. They've done nothing. It's tornado season in the Midwest. Hurricane season's right around the corner. And they're saying it's going to be worse. It could be the worst one we've ever seen. And yet these idiots are still in charge and have done nothing, despite countless requests from the governor of Kansas to do something about it. Her National Guard wasn't ready. And what does she get from Tony Snow? If you don't request it, you're not going to get it. These people drive me insane. Let's go to Matt in Mesa. Matt, you're on the air.
I'm right where you're at on this whole situation, and I actually could see this coming long ago, and I just hope people realize that as a country, we have to have our National Guard. That was a protection right. That was placed there, you know, by the founders for a reason, and goes right along with owning guns, and, right. You know, I am at a loss. It's astonishing that we're in this situation, but what we need to do as far as protecting ourselves at this point is, for one, no matter what your position is on guns, we need to have them. So we need to, like, not be pushing any legislation to have them controlled any further than they already are, at least until this situation is over, because I would not put it past Bush, especially with the legislation he's got where he can use executive order to particularly put us into martial law or in a police state. I wouldn't doubt that his controllers have that in mind. And now with the economy the way it is, the dollar being practically worthless, we are in no position to give up any protections that we have constitutionally.
Right.
And people ought to start thinking about preparing themselves for something like that, because I would not doubt that is on its way.
It's a frightening thought, Matt, but I can't sit here and disagree with you on that. In terms of the gun laws, yeah, I'm in favor of all the amendments. I'm in favor of the Second Amendment. I don't think we should take away all the guns. I'm not sure where that came about or how the Democrats got pinned with that one.
Because the Republicans aren't pinned with it, so right, the Democrats have to be.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the Brady
vote. That was like a toss-up, I'm sure.
Yeah. It is frustrating. I mean, when we look at the Military Commissions Act, we look at the fact that we already know Halliburton was building these quarantine camps to deal with bird flu issues, converting old military bases into quarantine camps, quote unquote. Prepare yourselves.
I don't know what everybody's position is, you know, party lines, but now we're also at a time now where we not needing to not worry about, I'll go back to the America, freedom to fascism. Aaron Russo's slogan, it's time to stop being good Democrats, stop being good Republicans, and start being good Americans. Yeah. And I think we could all start by taking a good look at Ron Paul. I really think that he could, if nothing else, he can teach Americans something that they've forgotten, and that's about our Constitution and how important it is. And people ought to really look into who he is and what he stands for, because he stands for America.
Well, we got to get our Constitution back, that's for sure, Matt. Thanks for your call today, buddy.
Thank you.
Let's go to Thomas in Miami. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you? I'd like to go all the way back to Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the downsizing of our government began with him. And his example was one of the greatest things he feared was a knock at his door. And the statement, I'm from the U.S. government.
Right.
And people want to think that Trina was a mistake and the government dropped the ball when it comes to Trina. But I don't think it was a mistake. I think it's a great example of those who hate government can't run government.
Yep.
And what we're seeing is an inability to run the government by this administration. And I don't think we can endure 20 months. You know, I think Gravel is making emphatical statements about how Congress should deal with its president and the people who support this war, you know, and continuously sacrificing our men and women to a senseless battle, dying in vain. You know, we have to make a change. We have to do something, and we need to do it quick. I don't know what. One thing Gravel says, the power needs to be put back into the hands of the people. Laws, I mean, I hope that this president is removed.
Well said, Thomas. I got to go to break. Sorry to cut you off, buddy. Thanks.
All right.
Back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. Joined by telephone by a real American hero, very special guest, Paul Rykoff joins us. Paul is the founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Thanks so much for being with us today, Paul.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things. First of all, your book, Chasing Ghosts, Failures and Facades in Iraq, just went paperback.
Yeah, it did. It was just over a year ago we released the hardcover, and mm-hmm. about a year before that was the anniversary of the Mission Accomplished speech, and that was the first time that I came out publicly and challenged President Bush on the war and the conduct of the war, and the book's been timed to coincide with that. So it's out in stores everywhere. You can get it on Amazon for $10, and I hope it gives people a grunt's eye view of what happened on the ground, what's going wrong, and hopefully some of the things we can try to salvage.
Well, it's a great read and one I've recommended to many of our listeners whenever I get calls from time to time and say, hey, you know, my brother or my brother-in-law or someone I care about is thinking about joining the military to go to Iraq. What can I tell them? And I always recommend your book to give them a view of, you know, what to really expect over there. So,
well, thanks. I appreciate it. I know that books like Cobra 2 and Fiasco have helped people really understand this war from a policy and a macro level, and I wanted people to understand it from a grunt's eye view, and I hope I can just communicate that to people at the least.
Right. You've been a great advocate for the actual troops, both over there, what they're going through, and what they face when they come home in terms of reintegrating with their families, dealing with so many problems that this this occupation is causing us. What's your take on what's going on in Kansas right now and the lack of National Guard troops to help in that situation?
Well, I think it's kind of, I try to find an analogy to explain this to folks, and I think back to when I was a kid in the game of Risk, the board game, and you think about the fact that you have a limited number of pieces, and if you put them all in one area, you're exposed in another area.
Right.
And I think that's what we've got in Iraq right now. You've got so many of your eggs in one basket, 20 brigades on the ground in Iraq and two in Afghanistan, many of them National Guard brigades. Four were just activated to go over for a second tour. We'll probably see another five activated before the end of this year. And their equipment's over there, their helicopters over there, their people are over there, and they're not here to guard against things like tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, et cetera. So I think that this tornado, just like Hurricane Katrina, reveals that in many ways our back door is wide open and we're very vulnerable and just really overextended.
Right. And as we learned today with the six guys who were plotting to attack Fort Dix, we do have to fight them here. Fighting them over there really has nothing to do with whether or not we fight them here.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my biggest challenge to the president. He always says we have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. What if we have to do both?
Right.
And we've really drained our strategic reserves. The 82nd Airborne keeps a brigade at the ready that they call America's 911, the Ready Brigade, that's supposed to be, on a moment's notice, ready to jump in wherever we need them, and they're not ready anymore. They've been overextended. They're out in the field training, and we don't have the same type of response capabilities that we had before 9/11. Mm-hmm. And the president finally increased the size of the active duty recently, but that's pretty late in coming.
Right.
And our people are there now for a third, fourth tour, and this pace is just really unsustainable.
Right. I mean, just in terms of the stress on the troops and the pace of deployment, what effect is it having on, I mean, you're in touch with people over there and when they come back here, what effect is it having on our military right now?
Well, I think, what you don't hear in the headlines is the stress it has on the families.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce rates have skyrocketed. It's really hard to keep your family together when you're gone 2 out of 3 years. Kids are having learning problems, and families are really stressed. We're also seeing an increase in things like post-traumatic stress disorder. Roughly 1 in 3 troops coming home will face that. And we're also seeing retention rates and recruiting rates start to erode. So, you're not just running the system hard, you're running the people hard. And that's the sign of a really overextended military that's going to have residual effects far beyond Iraq. That's going to be stuff we're dealing with for decades.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. In the last few months, we watched the administration trying to abdicate its responsibility about Iraq. Whether we're hearing it now, the responsibility is the generals on the ground, and rumors out there they're trying to find a war czar or somebody else to sort of take the blame for all of, step in and run this war as if no one's been running it. And now just this week, we hear John Boehner saying that in fact there is a GOP timetable for getting things done. They're going to wait till September or so before they start holding the administration to account. And now this is sort of, it seems like it's tied to a political timetable and not necessarily based on quote-unquote situation on the ground there. What's your impression of Boehner's comments this weekend?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. It's tied to a political timetable, and that's the election cycle here in America.
Right.
I think that you're going to see GOP candidates going home over the August recess and hearing it from their constituents. And you're also going to see Republicans who are in marginal districts, people like Susan Collins in Maine, Norm Coleman in Minnesota, who are on very fragile political footing. And I think eventually they're going to reevaluate and start to break with the president. And I think it's a sad thing that it takes a reelection campaign to really drive that.
Right.
But I think that's the reality on the ground, because the political solution in Iraq is not happening.
And it's not going to happen this summer, because leading up to September, we just found out the Iraqi parliament is taking the whole month of July and August off.
Right.
So they're really, if it's not done by June, nothing's going to happen between then and September, except more of our soldiers killed and wounded.
Well, that's the problem with the president's current argument, is that a lot of it's dependent upon the surge plan, which I hope works, but I'm very doubtful about the possibility of it succeeding. Even if it does succeed and we've got a secure situation on the ground at the end of the summer, there's no progress on the political side.
Right.
Maliki has no validity among his own people, and the factions are tearing each other apart. So even if the miracle did happen and our troops nailed down the security situation and pitched a no-hitter, we still have no guarantee that the Iraqis are going to step up and do their part. And that's not a blame game. That's just a military analysis that we've got to plan for in the event it doesn't happen.
Right. And there's a report coming out of the Pentagon today that, 35,000 additional troops were put on alert for a fall deployment in Iraq.
Yeah, and that's predictable. I mean, these are units like the 10th Mountain Division and 1st ID and others that have been over there at least once in the past. And you've got folks like the 3rd Infantry Division down at Fort Stewart, Georgia, that's going to be getting ready to go for a third tour. So that's, you know, pretty much since this war started, they're looking at 3 years away from home. It's just a tremendously fast pace, and we're really seeing signs of wear at every level, even the equipment shot at this point. And it's the one thing I would urge people to really keep an eye on. The military can't keep this pace up very long.
Wow, unbelievable. I'd like to turn our attention back home a little bit. I was over at your website today, and I noticed a couple of lead articles you had about the VA. Particularly, you know, they announced a couple of years ago that they were had underestimated the cost of caring for our wounded vets by about $1 billion. Yet they essentially just received bonuses. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this is pretty wild. I mean, the VA had a terrible year. In addition to losing some laptops that had the data of a few million veterans on it, including Social Security numbers, that got a lot of press. At the core, the VA's had a hard time getting their numbers right. They thought they had seen 25,000 vets and testified before Congress about it, and the real number was 75,000. So the Secretary Nicholson was getting his own numbers wrong, and they faced a $1 billion shortfall. Both parties blasted them, and they had to rush through this supplemental. So this is a rough year for the VA, and we found out last week that there's been over $3 million in bonuses allocated to VA officials as high as $33,000 apiece. So these are the people who are supposed to be getting the numbers right. These are the people who are supposed to be providing oversight, and they're getting bonuses that are higher than any other part of the government. And it's really unprecedented because we're already facing veterans who are dealing with wait times and delays in claims. There's 600,000 claims backlogged at the VA, and the guy who's supposed to oversee it got a $33,000 bonus. So it's really like rewarding people for failure.
Wow. Failing upwards, that seems to be a recurring theme in the current administration.
Unfortunately,
Sadly. I'd like to talk a little, well, we're almost out of time, but I'd like to talk, I mean, for this segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about your current agenda in Congress, some of the things the IAVA is working on and are lobbying for.
Well, I thank you for mentioning it earlier, and I hope that folks will check out our website. If you go to IAVA.org, we've laid out a plan of 31 agenda items that can help people really support the troops. And we focus on veterans issues. We're a veterans advocacy group. But we look at things like mental health care, transitional services, GI Bill, and other concrete legislative priorities that should be universal. Everybody across the board, no matter what your party affiliation, should be able to stand by these. And the two priorities for us right now in the next few weeks is going to be mandatory confidential mental health counseling for everybody. That's not happening right now, believe it or not. But we need to get that in place. And we're working on a new GI Bill that would cover the full cost of tuition, fees, and a stipend. The GI Bill is not what it used to be, and we need to bulk that up to make sure we're getting folks what they deserve when they get back on the educational side.
Right, right. Hey, we've got to take a break. I'd like to have you come back, Paul, if you could. Maybe,
sure.
Maybe take a few phone calls.
Sure.
All right. Hey, we'll be right back with Paul Rykoff, founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We'll take your calls at 1-800-989-1480. If you have a question for Paul, give us a holler. We'll be right back after these messages.
Standing tough under stars and stripes, we can tell. This dream's in sight. You've got to admit it at this point in time that it's clear. The future looks bright. By red.
Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Malloy all week. Joined by telephone by a very special guest, Paul Rykoff, founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, also author of Chasing Ghosts, Failures and Facades in Iraq, now out on paperback. Also, check out their website, www.iava.org. All kinds of great information about veterans issues, chance to sign a petition. They are lobbying Congress to make sure veterans get the health care they need and deserve. And you can also donate to their organization as well to keep them afloat. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Let's take a phone call. I got first up is Sharon in Sacramento, California. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm so overwhelmed and so frightened, and I just want to give you some items and then let you think what I'm concluding, and then let me know how paranoid I am on a scale of 0 to 1 to 10.
Okay.
First of all, posse comitatus has been stricken.
Mm-hmm.
Habeas corpus has been stricken. The NRA is now lobbying because the White House is trying to take the Second Amendment away from possible terrorists, and the Mexican truck drivers are ready to start coming over here. It's like we're without protection. We don't have any borders. It seems like somebody's trying to take our guns away from us, and our guard is away. It just feels. And then we've got these detention centers. It just feels like somebody's just trying to emasculate us and push us into slavery.
Hmm.
How paranoid am I?
Well, that's a tough one. There's certainly reason to be concerned. All the things you mentioned are actually happening, and there are reason to be concerned about it. I have a lot of faith in the American people, and I think we would stand up. I don't think we would put up with it. I don't know, Paul. What do you think?
I think you're right. And there's an old saying that one of the old non-commissioned officers told me before I left for Iraq. He wrote me in a letter and said, "Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not trying to kill you." And I wouldn't necessarily assume all those folks that you mentioned are trying to kill us, but I think there's a larger reality that we're all starting to realize is that this is not a safe time in our country's history. And I think my biggest criticism of the war in Iraq is that it hasn't made us safer.
Right.
I think our foreign policy is really endangered our national security, especially on the domestic front, in a lot of ways. And you know, we talk a lot about the borders in Iraq being porous, and we can't protect those there, but we obviously can't protect our own at home. So I think it really has to do with limited resources. And in a dangerous world, you've got to use them wisely. And I think right now the president's just not doing that.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Sharon.
Bye-bye.
Right. Let's try Kimberly in Phoenix. Kimberly, welcome.
Hey, good evening. This is what I would like to talk about is the fact that we are so understaffed with the military. They're actually starting to let felons in, and at the same time, we're losing all of our equipment, so how are they going to keep up? And in addition to that, since we're so understaffed, why don't they just go ahead and let people in who want to serve, for instance, our gays and homosexuals that are really qualified, but yet they've thrown out because of the UCMJ?
Well, I think you bring up a couple of good points, and the key one that I think you're focusing in on is the fact that we've really watered down our force. As many as 10% of our recent recruits wouldn't have gotten in before. We lowered the standards, and the military is under such a tremendous crunch right now that they've got to do things like let in people with past felony convictions and let 42-year-old privates into the military. Right now, if you're 42 years old, you can join the National Guard or the Army tomorrow. And I think that's a sign of how overextended and how desperate our military is right now. And I think you touched on another good point about gays in the military. I think we're going to reach a supply and demand issue. And I wish I could say that the military was going to do it because it was the right thing to do to let in gays in the military. But I think the reality is they need bodies. And at some point, they're going to have to let that policy go because they've lost a lot of key people in key areas, especially interpreters. People who speak Arabic and other languages are vital assets, and their sexual orientation shouldn't matter when we need qualified people on the battlefield.
Well, thank you so much. I know that I'm a nurse, and I would certainly go back in if they would take us back.
They might.
Yeah, thanks, Kimberly, and thanks for your service.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, I mean, interesting point. I mean, what does that do to troop morale? I mean, troops on the ground, and all of a sudden, the guy next to you is pushing 42 years old. Doesn't that put the soldiers already there at a greater risk?
It really does, and nobody really wants to talk about it because, you know, we are all in awe, I think, at times, and grateful for the service and the commitment of the people within our military, but we've got to face the hard reality, and I think General McCaffrey has been one of the best critics on this, and if you haven't seen his most recent report, I would encourage your listeners to Google it, where he talks extensively about how we're really compromising the integrity of our force by lowering these standards, and that's after we're already complementing our overextended military with over 100,000 contractors.
Right.
Who are filling the gaps and helping this administration bridge the gap between the number of troops we need and the number of troops we have. They thought this war would be over quickly, and they thought these little Band-Aid solutions would be able to get us through a short period of time. But over the long haul, they're really showing some serious flaws in the planning and weakening our force overall.
Is there a sense over there among the military, is there some resentment of the contractors? Obviously, these guys make a lot more money for doing very similar work. Is there tension between the two, or are our troops over there just happy to have more hands
on deck? No, there's definitely tension. You may not hear it from the generals, but I write about it extensively in my book where, you know, I had a sergeant who's making, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a year to drive a truck, and there's a KBR contractor across the lot making $100,000 to do the same job.
Wow.
It's incredibly demoralizing. They have better living conditions. They get a lot more vacation. And ultimately, they don't answer to the same chain of command. So they can leave if they don't like it. And I think that level of inequality really does breed resentment. And a lot of them are ex-military, so you can't blame the individuals.
Right.
But I think as a policy, the involvement of these contractors is unprecedented. And another hidden side of that is that they're poaching some of our best people. Special Forces, Navy SEALs, Green Berets are leaving the active duty to go over to the contractors to make more money.
Right.
And over time, that's really going to drain some of our most qualified and best-trained people.
Hey, Paul, thanks so much for spending time with us today. Again, the book is called Chasing Ghosts, Failures and Facades in Iraq, out now in paperback. www.iava.org is the website. Paul Rykoff, thank you again so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir, very much.
Good talking with you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we'll be right back. More of the Molloy Show. It's all caller-driven from here on out, folks, for the next 2 hours. I will take your phone calls. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. I have some audio to share with you as well, some stuff you will not believe. Stick around. Hey, we're back. This is Representative Theodore Poe on the floor of the House of the Representatives today. You got me over here? There we go.
Mr. Speaker, does anybody realize there's a war going out there in the desert sands of Iraq and the rough mountains of Afghanistan? Apparently not, or Congress would be taking care of our troops. Mr. Speaker, the troops will be out of funds to carry the fight to the enemy by the end of June. So where's the money? Spending money is what Congress does. Why hasn't this body provided the funds for our troops and equipment and for more personnel? This is an emergency. Delay will put our troops at risk. We should authorize the funds now, send equipment now, and if needed, send more troops. The American people expect our military to do their duty. Well, the American people expect us to do ours as well. Congress needs to quit talking about supporting the troops and put money where our mouths seem to be. Nathan Bedford Forrest, successful Confederate general, said it best about winning and victory and the means to do so. He said, get there firstest with the mostest.
Now, who is Nathan Bedford Forrest, you may ask? Why, as he mentioned there, a Confederate general, that is correct. A Confederate general, also responsible for some mass slaughters, particularly of African-American soldiers. And he was also the very first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That's right, members of Congress on the floor of the House of Representatives quoting the very first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan when talking about funding our troops. Now, it's highly unlikely that Forrest ever petitioned Congress for more money for his troops. But there it is. Ted Poe, Republican from Texas, quoting first Grand Wizard of the Klan. Welcome to George Bush's America, ladies and gentlemen. First up in the queue, my buddy Rich in New Jersey. Rich, welcome.
Hey, Mike. Always good to talk to you, Jeff. You're on Mike's show tonight, so I said Mike.
I'll call it a compliment.
You're doing a good job of filling for him, and let me say in the traditional Malloy fashion, God, do I hate these people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable,
isn't
it?
These Republicans have no shame. It was so good to hear Paul Rykoff, and I agree with you. He is a true American hero.
Yep.
As is Sarge, who I'm so happy here has a show on KPHS now.
Yeah, it's on the network as well. You can hear it on the network feed. You can hear it on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. East Coast.
I will be listening, believe me, because I love KPHX.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I'm calling, I'm sitting here, my blood was boiling while you were going through the particulars about the situation in Kansas with Sebelius,
mm-hmm.
and the requests and the denials and the lies and the prevarications of this administration. Jeff, I have come very close in the last 6 months. My two best friends are Vietnam veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of that age. I did not serve. I resisted. I was a draft resister. But they have always respected me for what I believe, and I have always respected them. But in the last 6 months, I have been twice by my two best friends accused of treason.
Wow.
And I am willing to, if they accuse, I put, told them both, if you ever suggest that I am guilty of treason again, because I will not support this president and his war, our friendships are over. And I would hate to lose them because I love them dearly. But I had to put them on notice. You will not question my patriotism. Neither one of them reads books. Neither one of them follows the news. Neither one of them has paid attention to how this president, this chicken hawk, lying scoundrel president, has destroyed our military and has destroyed this nation. And they call me treasonous, and I will not put up with it, Jeff.
Since when does a blind allegiance to any man, a form of patriotism, your allegiance should be to our country, to our Constitution, and to the nation first.
They don't get that, Jeff. I'm sorry to say that they don't understand that. They have.
That's just king worship, basically. It's a monarchist.
Their view is flag, president, Constitution last.
Wow.
I turn it upside down.
Right.
Okay? And they don't understand that. But I tell you, I love them dearly, but I will not be accused of treason by anyone. I consider myself a patriot. I consider myself a patriot during the Vietnam War by standing against it. And I believe I love this country as much as they do. And I will not, I never told them they were wrong for what they believe.
Right.
And if they ever challenge me again, I will lose them. And it'll be painful for me because I love them dearly like brothers. But I consider myself a patriot, and I consider them misguided patriots too.
Mm-hmm.
I honor and respect their service. Just like I honor and respect Paul Rykoff and all the veterans of this current war who have been misled by an administration that has done nothing but lie and prevaricate and destroy this country. And we need to stand, and I'm getting ready to engage in some serious civil disobedience at this point, like I did during Vietnam, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just about there.
We got to start pushing for the impeachment thing. 39% in the last poll I saw, 39% say they are support impeachment of Bush and Cheney.
I'm there, Jeff.
That's a good start.
I'm there. And I hope to see you. I hope to get out to Phoenix in the fall and see you and Sarge and everybody over there. I love you guys.
Looking forward to the good work. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
You too, buddy. Let's go to Roman in Mesa. Roman, welcome.
Hey, Jeff. Good show.
Thank you.
Listen, you know, we talk about all the way that Bush is destroying this country and how he is stealing the resources from this country and sending it to Iraq and, you know, the National Guard and everything. But there is one aspect of him stealing our resources that sometimes we don't mention, and that is that because the National Guard is made up of our citizens, that means that a lot of our police officers, firefighters, other first responders, you know, all of the teachers and doctors and nurses are all going to Iraq, and so therefore we don't have the kind of service here in the United States that we should have. And, you know, because I'm in the union, and very frequently I talk to municipalities and what have you about, you know, providing the necessary kinds of support for our members and communities that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, how can we do it? You know, we've got so many of our officers serving in Iraq and firefighters serving in Iraq, and we got to keep these jobs open. you know, yep. And that's one thing that has hit me in the face recently that I hadn't thought about, but we really should think about it. And the governor is right. We're stripping our states and communities of the necessary resources that our community needs and yeah. sending them to Iraq for no good reason.
And what was so infuriating about that is the reaction to her today, that they're saying you never asked us for this stuff, and it's documented that on six separate occasions, including sitting with the president in the back of a limousine discussing it, and then they turn around and try to humiliate her in the public and in front of her constituents that she never asked for these things. It's just so infuriating to me.
Yep, me too. They are real, real liars, and this is the worst administration in the history of America.
Yep, bar none.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Roman.
Bye-bye.
Again, it is just so infuriating to me. You know, there is some good news, though. All right, before we go to break, I'm going to leave you with this quick little story. Congress members sponsor a bill to shut down Guantanamo Bay. That's right. Senate, similar measure introduced by Dianne Feinstein in the Senate, but two House members, Jane Harman from California, and where's the second one right here? Neil Abercrombie from Hawaii, basically are putting up legislation to shut down Gitmo. Shut it down. We've been holding these people for years without charge, and eventually every now and then they release 30 or 40 of them after 4 years of being tortured and held, send them back to their home countries. Shut it down. Absolutely shut it down. This country should stand for something bigger than torture. We have to get our country back, ladies and gentlemen. We have to. We cannot survive another 20 months of this administration. The call for impeachment is ringing louder and louder. I'm going to put up some links on my website on this next break where you can go and sign petitions, get involved, encourage your representatives to take up impeachment. Let's take a break. We'll be right back after these messages. I got a full board of callers here here on the Mike Malloy Show, 1-800-989-1480 on the Nova M Radio Network. Stick around, folks. Lots to talk about.
Together, we were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run. We would hang together, or they'd hang us one by one. Names were gone like footprints, whisper on the wind. A lover was a comrade, was a stranger, was a friend. When we slept, our eyes were open, and there's something.
Sam Stone came home to his wife and family after serving in the conflict overseas. And the time that he served had shattered all his nerves. Left a little shrapnel in his knee, but the morphine eased the pain, and the grass grew around his brain, and gave him all the confidence he lacked, with a purple heart and a monkey on his back. There's a hole. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pitchers have big ears, don't stop to count the years. Sweet songs never last too long on broken radios.
Really sad song by John Prine, written some 35 years ago about the Vietnam War. And we see it playing out once again. The same story over and over and over. Young men sent to a faraway land to die for a lie. So it's some fat, rich white guys who can get a little fatter and a little richer. Let's go to Joe in Tempe. Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff, give it a break. You liberals are starting to cry a little too much.
I ain't crying. I'm fighting.
There's nothing to fight about.
Yeah, there's a lot to fight about.
You know, you guys are hypocrites.
Your administration is ruining this country.
Give me a
right
chance
before our eyes.
Give
Go
me
ahead.
A chance.
You
You've
it.
Had your chance. Listen, you said that our administration didn't care about the people in Katrina because they were black. Now you guys, you say, oh, you're not taking care of the people in Kansas. Well, I guarantee the people in Kansas aren't black. How do you explain it?
They're incompetent.
Listen, they treat everybody equally.
Yeah, badly.
Hey, let me tell you something. What makes you think you're going to put a liberal like Bill Clinton, who only has one thing on his mind, and that's sex, put him in there? What makes you think that's going to make things so much better?
Uh-oh. Bill Clinton's not running for president.
Is have girlfriends. Come on.
Bill Clinton's not running for president,
Joe. His wife
is. Yeah.
And his wife, she's got to spend all her time keeping an eye on him.
She doesn't have to keep an eye on him.
Al Gore is a big hypocrite with the global warming.
How is he a big hypocrite with the global warming?
Because he uses more energy than all your listening audience combined.
No,
got his own private jet, five houses. He's a phony.
Unbelievable.
No. Why you liberals just want to be...
Why do you want to attack Al Gore instead of talking about his
message? Because I hate you liberals.
Right, yeah.
And I wish
that's
George
all
Bush
you got. That's all you Republicans have is a hatred of liberals. You don't know how to run a government. You don't know how to run a war. You don't know how to run a military. You don't know how to do anything but steal and lie.
I want four more years of George Bush.
That's going to happen. That's really going to happen, Joe. Come on. Get your head out of your backside.
What would be so bad about it?
Where do you go from there? Honestly, where do you go from there? What would be so bad? I can't stand another 4 minutes of George Bush, let alone another 4 years. My God, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, he loves us. Yeah, I know. Joe's usually a lot nicer to me, but he could tell I was a little agitated today, so he was going to come in poking a stick at me right off the bat. Let's go to Julian in Houston. Julian, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, I think as far as this funding goes in Iraq, I think it'd be probably better if we cut funding to Halliburton and KBR.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Get rid of the
Iraq.
Contractors. Yeah, there you go.
Have Iraq rebuilding Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd probably take a lot of stress off our military because then the Iraqis would be busy rebuilding their own country that we destroyed.
Right. And they'd actually have jobs and they'd be working instead of building IEDs and bombs. They'd actually be building bridges and building neighborhoods. And yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As far as impeachment for Bush, I think that's too good. I think he needs to be put in prison with the rest of his administration.
Well, impeachment's a first step. I would love to see him before the Hague on war crimes because what they did in the Middle East is international war crime.
Right. And I think that would put Gitmo to good use. You know,
yep.
We could send him down there.
There you go.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Julian. Thanks for sticking around. Who's up next? Pam in Phoenix. Pam, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How you doing?
Good. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, and what a delight to meet Sarge yesterday.
Yeah, what a great guy, isn't he?
He's a great guy. He's a truly sweet soul, and I just really enjoyed speaking with him. And we went to the Bob Bowman event,
mm-hmm.
and I want to tell people about Bob Bowman. Please go to www.thepatriots.us and research what this man has to say. He is an American hero, and I respect him so much. He was director of the Star Wars program under the Reagan and Carter administration. He now opposes that program because it's been switched over for offensive purposes. He's won every medal in the book. He's got a resume a mile long.
Hey, Pam?
And he, yeah.
Can I hold you over, darling?
Yeah,
please.
You
thank
bet.
You. Thank okay. you. Hey, I'll be right back with more of The Malloy Show right here on Nova M Radio. Phone lines are full, so I won't give you the number. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show. I love the lyrics to that song. This is Dick Morris. I'll play you this clip here, and then we'll get right back on the phones. Dick Morris, a Republican, whatever you want to call him, mouthpiece, strategist, idiot.
I think that withdrawal from Iraq, it obviously gives al-Qaeda a huge victory, huge victory. On the other hand, if we stay in Iraq, it gives them the opportunity to kill more Americans, which they really like. One of the things, though, that I think the anti-war crowd has not considered is that if we're putting the Americans right within their arms' reach, they don't have to come to Wall Street to kill Americans. They don't have to knock down the Trade Center. They can do it around the corner. And convenience is a big factor when you're a terrorist.
So is he saying that we're helping al-Qaeda by having our troops over there? Is that essentially his argument? So they won't come to Wall Street? We'll just take our bravest men and women, the people who volunteer to serve this country, and we'll throw them over there and put a big target on their back. That'll keep them busy. That's what they think of our troops, folks. That was from Fox News. That's the role of our troops, according to the 28%ers, the Fox News crowd. Target practice. Alan in Scottsdale, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm just so disgusted. This Joe, this guy has the intellect that has a negative sign in front of it. It's funny, you know, you and I are friends, and we've known each other for a long time, and I've heard you debate people and just cut them down to shreds, but I noticed that with this guy, his intellect is so low that you have a hard time really cutting him down to size, because it's like you're talking to a Neanderthal guy.
Right.
And it just, you know, it just flusters the heck out of you. But this guy is, why is he not over in Iraq?
Good question.
Why? He's another one of those right-wing chicken hawks. That's what he is.
Yep.
Okay, but you know, I am a Vietnam veteran, a very proud one, although the war was unnecessary, just as this one is. To that gentleman that called earlier and talked about his friends who are Vietnam vets, you know, history has shown that he was right, not the Vietnam veterans.
Right.
History has shown. So.
Again, the people who are the vets, just, you know, they were just serving their country. They were following orders.
Understood.
They were doing their code. But yeah, the people who sent them there were the ones who were wrong.
Understood. Yeah. I mean, that war was wrong. That war was the Civil War. But I am proud of the part that I played when my company asked me to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just come up to date. You know that my daughter's a captain in the Army. And my husband's a captain.
Yep.
She was in Afghanistan, Iraq. Now, I have no more babies to stop to defend this country. No, let these chicken hawks like this Joe guy go. Okay, let me mention this, and I haven't heard anyone mention this. I do believe that we're going to have to purge the upper ranks of the military, because I think they've been contaminated with politics, and they've been contaminated with religious certain things about the religion that should not and don't belong in the military.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one, because, you know, there has been a purge of the military going on over the last 6 years, and those not willing to pledge loyalty to the Bush-Cheney administration have been retired, basically. So
what we need to do is, once we get these Republicans out of there, we're going to have to purge the upper ranks, get those guys out, and put our military back where it was before these clones came on the scene.
Yeah, that's a big job.
I was in the military for 11 years. I had intended to retire from the military, but I changed my mind. Mm-hmm. But you never bring politics, you never bring religion. Religion was always there, but it was something that was there, and you gravitate towards it. It was never pushed on you.
Right.
And these people have screwed up our military.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to be talking with Mikey Weinstein on Friday about that very topic, about the rise of the religious right within the ranks of the military, specifically
absolutely.
At the Air Force Academy, where his
and
son
is. I say this as a Christian. I am Christian, but I am not the caliber of these clowns who are running amok in this country.
Right.
I mean, these people are terrible. But look, you're doing a fine job there, and I can't tell you how much I despise Republicans. And those other guys, I just can't stand them, because they'd rather their team win than for the Constitution to win.
Right. Yeah. And anybody who says they hate liberals, they hate America. This country was founded by liberals. You know, there were conservatives around in that in the time of the founding of this country. They were called Tories or loyalists.
That's right.
There were conservatives every step along the way. If you look at Mount Rushmore, all liberals up on Mount Rushmore. Look at our coins, all liberals. Washington, Jefferson, FDR, Lincoln, liberals. Liberals is what make this country great. If you hate liberals, you hate America.
Eisenhower,
liberal by today's standards, that's for sure.
The very concept of America is a liberal concept.
Right.
Well, thank you for being there, and don't worry about Joe. He's just a clown.
Thanks, Alan.
Take care, friend.
Take care, buddy.
Good night.
Good night. Let's go to Bill in Phoenix. Bill, you're on the air.
Hey, partner.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, could I be better?
Maui, huh?
Yeah, man. You know, Jeff, how long have I been carrying a sign that said impeach these guys?
Oh, I know.
5 years, six years, right? So
we're catching up.
So, you know, but these people make their way, Jeff, by breaking things, right?
Right.
Okay, so how do we, what we have to do is we have to build something that they can't break.
Yep.
What can't they break?
An idea.
Or a great unity.
Yep.
You know, our forefathers walked into the woods when the Revolutionary War was about to break out, and they let themselves be known to each other. They called to each other. They built a greater unity with their eyes and their ears. Will you join the 3 cent solution?
I'm with you, buddy.
Can we tell them what it is?
Yeah, go ahead. Please do.
You know, it's adjusted for inflation. There was a time when putting your 2 cents in was enough. Now we got to put our 3 cents in. For 3 cents, you buy a safety pin and a thumbnail-sized piece of red felt. Then you use what we all have in common, our heart, and pin it there and let that stand for are wanting to impeach this administration and end this disaster of a war. Nothing more, nothing less. What follows, follows.
Yeah. I heard you describing your success with the 3 cent solution over there in Maui. You said you actually were able to give out a few to one particular guy.
I'm sorry, Jeff, I didn't catch the question.
You were telling a story on the previous program about how you walked up, a guy asked you what it was. You know.
And I asked him, do you know Cindy Sheehan?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't until I began to describe her, and then he did.
Right.
And I said, and that's what inspired this for me. And I told him it's a 3 cent solution, you know, that when somebody actually point to their heart and they ask me, what is that? And now I got you pointed to your heart.
Right.
You know the spiel, Jeff.
Yeah, I know it, but I want you to share it with all those good people out there in Radio Land.
When I wear a red patch and a safety pin over my heart. The safety pin's for motherhood. The red, it was always the alert. It attracts our eyes. For me, it's what we have to give each other. We have to build a great unity. We have to have a bond. At the end of the Vietnam War was my awareness, when I became aware. We had a great unity. They knew we'd shut them down. We build this great unity simply by applying a 3 cent solution. 3 cents, a safety pin, a red thumbnail-sized piece of felt worn over your heart. Like Cindy Sheehan, she takes a stand. Where she stands, when she stands there. Cindy, you inspired me so. We can end this. We're so much better than them. They will not mark themselves. They will not show themselves. They hide in the darkness. Come on out in the light with me. Come on. Please, join the 3 cent solution with me.
Thank you, brother.
You know, I love you, right?
I love you like a brother. Hey, Cindy's going to be on the show tomorrow.
And you told me Jesse was coming to town when?
He was going to be in town last week, and I'm not sure when his next plan is. I'll have to check with Mari.
See you soon.
We'll get him back, though.
Much peace, my friend. Right. Mahalo.
Yeah. Thank you, buddy.
Bye.
Let's see. Who's up next? Jeff in Phoenix. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Hey, listen, you know, you have your style. Mike Malloy has your style. You're both great. But one thing for a fact, Mike Lord definitely proves that Republicans are straight cowards because he can never get these cowards to call in when he's there. Whenever he's not there, they flock to call in. Now, how could a Republican who can't stand, who can't take the heat, how can he possibly be in the military and have a drill sergeant breathing down his neck?
Right.
He talks about he can't stand liberals. It's liberals who fight wars and win wars. It's Republicans who start them and then punk out.
Right.
They go, and it's obvious. But, I mean, they told me I'm going to call in when he's not there to talk
stupidness, foolishness. It just goes to show that they are really girly men. Mm-hmm. And they like to do, they like to have somebody else doing their killing from afar because it makes them feel real manly. And I'm curious to find out, for the Republicans, how many of these people were on medication when they were a child and they just became adults, but they have some sort of psychological problems that they like to inflict either some sort of death, destruction, or have somebody suffering within the country because it makes them feel like a man inside.
Right. Yeah.
It is the most bizarre thing how they're calling, all of them calling in. Now, when they always seem to call in when he's not there, which definitely proves that they're cowards. And one thing for a fact that must be remembered, because women make men in a sense. They do.
Mm-hmm.
And if behind every good man is a good woman, then Republican women have to be the worst. Because these are some of the most horriblest males I have ever heard. The things that they stand for, the women in their lives, all have to be the worst. They are definitely Satan's children.
Wow.
They are. They have to be Satan's children. Because no one in his right mind would be agreeing for this mass murder that's taking place right now. After we all know the fact that we've been lied into, of having our soldiers over being killed, the killing of innocents. You had some clown the other night talking about flying over and just dropping bombs.
That was the same guy.
yeah, that clown.
Yeah,
that
same
is a
guy.
Straight coward. And I guarantee that coward has never, ever put on a uniform.
Yeah, Genocide and, Joe, yeah.
And he backs down for real heat. I mean, you know, because you have a more, fair, nicer style.
Well, thank you.
And Mike, no, but you get to the point.
Well,
you cut him down
that.
To size. But if he can't stand, if he's too afraid to call in when Mike is there, that just goes to show, like a lot of these Republicans do, notice how many of them call in when Mike's not around. That is going to show that they really are cowards, and they can't fight wars, and they can't run the country because they're scared.
Yep.
They're coward little girly men. They really are.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate your call. I got to go to a break. I can hear the music in the background. Thanks. I'm gonna cherish that the women behind the Republican comment for quite a while.
It's
thank
a
you.
Fact. It
thank
is a
you.
Fact.
Man, that was great. Behind every great man is a woman. What kind of women are standing behind these Republican men? My goodness. I got to apologize for Pam. I held her over, and then I didn't talk to her during this segment. Pam, I'm sorry. I'll get you right the first call up when we get back. We'll be right back after the messages. The Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike all week long. The phone number, if you want to join this evening's conversation, 1-800-989-1480. And there is a phone line open right now. Let's get back on the phone. Actually, a quick email. This is from Andrew. He says, you mentioned Ted Poe, quoting the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan on the show tonight, and thought you might find it interesting that his children's names all start with the letter K. Let's go back to the phones. Pam, I'm so sorry I left you holding there. You know, I usually just look at the numbers first, and I got through.
Excuses.
Yeah. And your number reset because I put you held you over. So sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm like that puppy in the window. You know, I'm still here. No, I was singing the praises of Bob Bowman.
Oh, amazing guy. Yeah.
I really want people to go to www.thepatriots.us and discover what this man has to say, because on top of everything else I had said about him, he's a rocket scientist.
Yep.
I mean, he made this joke because he did his presentation as though, you know, he were the president.
Mm-hmm.
And toward the end, he said, you know, they say that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to be president. But it just so happens that I am, and we all laughed. He's funny, and his wife is wonderful. And here they are, you know, people of this stature. I mean, he really was an insider,
mm-hmm.
and operated in that realm within the power structure. And here he is. He and his wife are going across the country in an RV.
Mm-hmm.
And they're speaking to us. They're coming to our communities to talk to us, to look us in the eyes, and to hear what we have to say, and to communicate with the people, the populace. And I really respect that. And if there are people like him out there, there are all sorts of people within that we don't necessarily know about as well. There are people who are carrying this torch and walking this walk. And there is so much happening. We must not become fearful. I've heard, about the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
Someone called in, and I really understand where she's coming from. You know, am I paranoid? And I have struggled with all of those thoughts and feelings. But, you know, the first quality of the soul in the Bhagavad Gita, which was Gandhi's Bible,
mm-hmm.
And it's these 29 characteristics to sort of transcend human consciousness. And the first one, step one, is fearlessness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the
right.
beginning. Fear is a tool that they use to make us afraid, because people are more easily manipulated and coerced and controlled if they're fearful. And so we have to continually face our fears and overcome and embrace our courageousness, and also we are all in this together, and Bill said it, our unity. They cannot destroy our unity, and we're gaining in unity. When people like Bob Bowman come out to speak to us and connect with us, and now he's part of our community, you know, he's part of this movement, we're going to win. We're going to overcome all of this. We will, because all of us are willing to walk the long road, every single one of us. And so we will get to the other side.
We have some pretty huge challenges ahead of us.
We're
just beginning to learn. I mean, it's only been, what, 3.5-4 months the Democrats have had control of the Congress. We're just beginning to learn about the damages this administration has done through so many levels of our government.
It's going to continually be stunning. But
mm-hmm.
we have to just keep facing it one day at a time and
right.
doing what we're doing. And just bless you for what you're doing. I will forgive you for
making your wait all that time.
You are forgiven. So have a great show.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold until tomorrow's show, okay?
About that. I'll just wait.
All right. Thanks, Pam.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Oh, my goodness. I don't have time for another call, do I? No, Ian's shaking me off. Don't even answer it. You'll just cut him off. You'll have to hold him over, and then you'll screw it up again and make him sit through a whole segment waiting on hold. So much to talk about tonight, folks. Just one more hour left to go. The time flies here, but the phone lines are open. 1-800-989-1480. Oh, I take that back. We'll be right back after these messages.
Stop the show. One market don't stop the show. So get on board. There is a purpose, a running key.
Hey, we're back. This is Hugh Rimington reporting for CNN from Baghdad.
Wolf, it's too early to say if this constitutes a trend yet, but if it is a trend, it's a disturbing one. The body count in Baghdad, the bodies dumped across the city, appear to be rising again. On Monday, 30 bodies found, many of them showing signs of torture. That brings the seven-day total to 153 bodies. That figure had been lowering in recent days, seen as a promising sign for the Baghdad security plan, signs perhaps of it spiking back up again. More bombs across Iraq as well, the worst of them in Kufa, south of Baghdad, outside a restaurant favored by Shiite pilgrims moving to the holy city of Najaf, a car bomb exploding, killing 16 people and injuring scores more. Another bomb in southeastern Baghdad outside a minibus, killing 3 people. And a suicide bomber igniting or setting off a vest in Diyala province, northeast of Baghdad, a province that's seen a lot of trouble. He set off the bomb inside a police station, and that one killed 5 people and injured 15 more.
153 bodies found in Baghdad in the last 7 days, most of them showing signs of torture. The administration will tell you this is progress. The surge is working. Oh, no, no, wait. Well, we won't know till September if it's working. More bodies, more death. We lost 104 American soldiers last month in April, one of the bloodiest months in quite some time. But according to Dick Morris, that's a good thing. It's making it easier for Al-Qaeda, so they're not on Wall Street killing Americans. They're killing soldiers in Iraq. I've also noticed, why are so many of the journalists in Iraq Brits? You know, Hugh Rimington, Michael Ware, Laura Logan. Because there aren't any American investigative journalists anymore. The best American investigative journalist we have writes for the BBC, Greg Palast. Because there isn't an outlet for him in this country. Ian just said, hey, you're leaving out Geraldo. Yeah, didn't he get kicked out of Iraq for drawing maps in the sand? Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Steve, El Dorado Hills, California. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, we're talking about Greg Palast as being, Hey, you should get some cooks tonight. Imagine somebody calling up wanting George Bush to do 4 more years. The guy was obviously a joke.
Yeah.
Nobody could possibly believe that. But hey, we were talking about conspiracy theories a little bit earlier, and there are quite a few conspiracies that really do occur, like 9/11 itself, Iran-Contra.
The Kennedy assassination, yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, and on the Kennedy assassination, I don't know, you probably already know this, E. Howard Hunt came out.
Yes, his son, Go ahead, tell
me. Have you talked about that?
No, I haven't talked about it at all. I haven't talked about it in the air. Please bring it up.
Yeah, so E. Howard Hunt created a tape which he sent to his son to be played only posthumously. I'm not sure the exact details, but the tape could only be played after E. Howard Hunt died. And essentially what he does is he kind of says, well, Johnson wasn't behind the assassination, but he kind of fingered a guy named Cord Meyer, who evidently JFK was having an affair with Cord Meyer's wife, which was... is a documented fact, and by the way, she was mysteriously murdered in Georgetown sometime later. But the thing is that he fingered this fellow Cord Meyer, and one of the other conspirators that he talked about was Frenchie, who was interpreted to be Sarti, who was a French marksman who had some relationship to French intelligence, but evidently there was another fellow Frenchie who was Charles Rogers, codename Montoya, who basically these were rogue right-wing CIA elements who were disappointed by the Bay of Pigs because in the Bay of Pigs thing, Kennedy pulled back the air cover when these dudes stormed the beaches, and the Free Cuba people had always blamed Kennedy for that, and of course Oswald had ties to the
and Dulles being fired, and
but it's a very interesting tape, and there's an article in Rolling Stone, but it'd be great if the mainstream media you know, made something of this, people probably think, well, it was, you know, 40 years over, you know, nearly 50 years ago. Nobody really cares anymore. But if you read what E. Howard Hunt said and listen to what he said on the tape, you get a real good idea of how these people work. He talked about intelligence. He talked about the CIA. He talked about all different kind of agency people.
Yeah.
He implicated his son was actually implicated in destruction of evidence, but was a minor and could never be prosecuted. But it's really interesting stuff, mainly for getting some view into how these guys work.
Right. Hey, Steve, you know, the person who sent me the link to the E. Howard Hunt story also had a link in there to over to YouTube, and there's a piece of footage on YouTube, and it's I'm going to try and describe it, but there's Kennedy's car with him and Connolly driving, and then the car immediately behind him is the Secret Service car.
Right.
And there are two Secret Service agents whose job it is to stand on the bumper on the back of the car to protect the president. There's footage, actual footage. excuse me. You can't hear it, but you can see it. You can see the agents reacting. They're being told to stand down. They all start, there's confusion in the car. They're all looking at one another. The guy walking between the two cars puts his hands up in the air three times, just shrugging his shoulders, as if to say, what the hell, as they stop, and Kennedy's car makes the turn into Dealey Plaza, where he's a few seconds later assassinated. That footage is out there, and it's on YouTube. You can see the Secret Service being told to stand down and the confusion that ensues after.
So is that from the Zapruder film? Or is that from
no, it was a different piece of film that just came out. It's not Zapruder, because Zapruder was over on the... right as they make that turn in the Dealey Plaza. So it's prior to the Zapruder film.
Well that particular model of Lincoln Continental is much smaller than we think, and they're pretty nippy. When you put your foot down, they go.
Right.
And those guys are trained to know gunfire when it occurs, and the fact the guy just didn't even put his foot on the pedal really tells you something.
Yep, yep.
But the main thing, I mean, obviously, you know, we can't go back, we can't change that, but these things do occur. I mean, look at Election 2000, look at the Plame case. These are real conspiracies. I think the problem that everyone has, including the left, is where conspiracy degenerates into some sort of paranoia, which of course is related to mental illness, and I think that's the real stigma.
Right, and again, that particular situation is certainly used to the advantage of those perpetrating these conspiracies, and just played off as if these people are just crazy.
There's a great book by Lynn Bracken. It's called The Shadow Government and State-Sponsored Terror. It's been a while since I looked at it. It's a great book, and basically he doesn't really talk about the whole conspiracy deal as much as how the government uses these things when they occur.
Interesting stuff. Hey, thanks a lot,
thanks.
Steve. Hey, do check out that YouTube video.
I definitely will. Thank
all
you.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, I was stunned when I saw this piece of video this weekend. I was just looking at this, and they go through the piece of film like five different times, and they give you a few different possible scenarios. Now, all right, now just watch this guy and how he reacts. Watch these two guys sitting in the car and how they, and it's just massive panic. These guys looking at one another going, what the hell is happening here? Let's go to Robert in Daly City, California, has a comment about that video. Robert?
Yeah, Jeff, that video that you saw on YouTube is taken from the Men Who Killed Kennedy, a History Channel special that actually...
Okay.
You can't get anywhere else right now.
Wow.
But that video is very damning. I mean, you see the lead Secret Service guy in the car behind Kennedy waving the guy off the car. And
right.
Like you say, three times he shrugs, puts his hands in the air, and then the driver of Kennedy's car puts his foot on the brake when he hears shots instead of moving. But, you know, E. Howard Hunt, I would not believe a thing he says. He's like a pathological liar, that guy.
Well, I think this was sort of a deathbed confession kind of thing, so.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm telling you, there's secrets that need to be kept even in death. And does he talk about George Herbert Walker Bush being in Dealey Plaza the day Jack Kennedy killed
him? I've seen the photographs of him standing in front of the book depository while they're upstairs trying to roust out Oswald.
Yes, sir. Yes, he is.
And there's also memos. There's actually documents with his signature telling his people at his office, I'm going to be in Dallas for a few days. I'll be back on the 25th.
Well, yeah. We'll get this, that Lyndon Johnson traveled up from Houston, where Bush was living, and at the same time that Bush did.
Yeah.
And they had this big party with the oil barons in Texas the night before that. And Johnson's aide came forward and said that Johnson inferred to her that... Kennedy's would never be embarrass him again.
Wow. Unbelievable.
You know, well, I mean, look at LBJ. I mean, JFK said LBJ was a pathological liar. He couldn't tell the truth even when he didn't need to lie.
Right.
But what I was going to get is Craig Miller, I believe, is a police detective, undercover guy with the Dallas police, which is right around the corner from Dealey Plaza, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They were told, take no part in the security of the president, okay? Well, Craig stood there, watched the limousine go by. As it made around the corners, he heard shots. He said, oh, no. He ran to the corner, and he saw everybody running to the scene of the shooting but one person.
Wow.
And that one person, he said, most closely resembled Oswald. And he said Oswald got in a car, which others have reported belonged to a similar to a car that George Herbert Walker Bush had seen in Dallas driving with. But what I wanted to say was that Mark Lane, U.S. Attorney Mark Lane, mm-hmm. had Hunt on the stand, and he found out about an FBI report that a CIA agent, 10 days after Kennedy in New York, when he was killed, 10 days later, she was sent back, didn't want to be a part of this scheme, was sent back to New York, came forward to the FBI and said, these are the two cars that traveled from Miami to New Orleans to Houston. We got word between Miami and Houston, between New Orleans and Houston to divert to Dallas the day before Kennedy was killed.
Wow.
And she said in this testimony that Mark Lane was subpoenaed from her with Hunt on the stand, was that these cars were sent to Dallas, and she declined to be part of it. And just read that testimony from Mark Lane, because he basically in the mid-60s solved that case. But the judge and the prosecutor did nothing with it.
Unbelievable. Hey, Robert, thanks for your call, buddy. Thanks for keeping me informed. I got to go to break. Thank you. Hey, we'll be right back with more of The Molloy Show. I got Ron on hold and a bunch of open lines. I don't like seeing that idle word there in them boxes. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. Give me a call. Weigh in. Any topic is on the table. It's The Mike Molloy Show. Be right back. Mike Molloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. I got a website. It's called jefffarias.com, and you can email me by just going to jeff@jefffarias.com if you'd like to get a message through, if you can't get through on the phones. Here's a couple of people have gotten through. Ron in Elk Grove, California. Welcome, Ron.
All right. A few points. Real good show. The so-called neocons are basically unrepentant Marxist radicals and fanatics.
Yeah.
They're essentially bad lefties versus good lefties like Laura Flanders and, you know, Air America. And so you got bad lefty radicals now posturing as Republicans. I noticed that Bush basically apes Ronald Reagan. He's apes Ronald Reagan during the day with the ranch and the God talk. Mm-hmm. But at night, Bush is reportedly apes Truman Capote. You know, the so-called shadow government has Bush blackmailed. Bush has been caught in perverted acts, photographed and videotaped, and that's part of the huge problem.
Well, there was that woman from Vegas who was running for some sort of office way back in 2004, actually, who apparently had all this dirt on Bush, and he was involved in all kinds of questionable acts.
Vic Ash, 20-year relationship,
right.
Not to mention Jeff Gannon. This is really important. You've heard of John Hagee, the evangelist. He had a hysterical book out, came out a year ago. I bought it from Walmart for $10. It's packed with lies. John Hagee. The front of it said, Iran's
nuclear, it shows a mushroom cloud. It says Iran's nuclear arsenal is ready. Mm-hmm. He was forced, apparently, this John Hagee, to reissue it. Came out and they took that statement off. Iran is the Keystone Cops. In 50 years, they probably wouldn't have anything. But John Hagee is a de facto foreign agent, you know, working for somebody else, like Likud or something. And he's a flat traitor. He puts out evil propaganda. Along with Jesus Hannity, you know, and people like Gallagher and Medved, they're all bought and paid for government hoes, and they're not working for us. They're working. Their income, all their income, should be divulged. That should be brought out into the open. You know.
Right. Have you read Connison's book, The Hunting of the President?
No.
He does a really good job. It was about all about the right wing's campaign to go after Bill Clinton,
yeah,
and the money behind it. He does a really great job, yeah, of tracing where all the funding for these guys
comes from. Yeah, it's probably similar to the book by David, the guy that turned from.
Yeah, David Brock, Blinded by the Right.
Great
his book. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, he has a great. Let me just say this, that there is, you know, this is partly a spiritual battle, and I think everybody recognizes we're dealing with flat devils here. They're like Luciferian worshiper dead-enders, you know.
Yep.
And if you read, you know, through the New Testament, it says in there that we can bind devils. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's partly a spiritual battle, and we are definitely dealing with.
Hey, Ron, I got to let you go, buddy. Sorry about that. I got a hard break, but we will be binding these Bush people as soon as we can. Thanks, buddy. Be right back.
Believe that what you put out, you'd eventually get back in return. I thought success was just a ladder to climb. And if it's true, there's a sucker born every minute of the day. I've been born a million times. And if it's true, there's a sucker born every minute, I say. You believe what you might, but I know that P.T. Barnum was right. P.T. Barnum was right.
Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike tonight, and I'm going to jump right back on the callers. Archie in Greenville, South Carolina. Archie, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good. How you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. I'm still worried, though. I'm worried about all this Alzheimer's that's going around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gonzalez can't remember nothing.
Yep.
How does
the man get home at night? That's what I want to know.
I mean, well, I think he read the same book that Ronald Reagan read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. When in doubt,
but look here,
forget.
The Iraqi war is not the only blunder that these guys have created.
Right.
This White House has created more than just the Iraqi war. I mean, sure, that is the biggest because they've killed a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
But this thing with cover-up, they never tell anything. There's no transparency. The American people actually know nothing of 6 years of our government.
Right. Yeah, they've been the most secretive administration ever in our history.
How can that be?
I don't know.
When they're working for, supposedly,
yep,
working for us.
Yeah.
But, I mean, could be working for Halliburton.
Yeah, they don't see it quite that way. I mean, Cheney's behind a lot of this. You know, he's been always arguing for this unitary executive and this, secrecy in government. And, one of the first things George Jr. did was seal all the records of his dad.
Well, don't kick me off the phone, but I think he's going over right now to negotiate.
Hmm.
That's why he's not here. He's going over to negotiate.
Interesting.
I mean, price, right?
Right, there you go. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look at Condoleezza. She has never said, not to one white child, white female child, nor a white black female, nor Latino, she has not come out and say, look at what I've done, and you can do. She's not encouraged one, not one.
Right. Yeah, she hasn't accomplished a damn thing, that's for sure.
Oh, no. Hmm. It astounds me how she's there.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, they could have just taken Ronald Reagan out of the grave and sent him there.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, hadn't said anything, done anything.
No, that's true. Yeah, you could have gotten any dummy to fill in for that job.
Hey, but let me say this here. I want to get off all of this that's going on because it just disturbs me so much. I want to say that you have done a bang-up job, and you're continuing to do a bang-up job.
Wow, that's awfully kind of you, Archie. I appreciate it.
All right. I'm going to let it go at that, okay?
You have a good evening. Get yourself some rest, buddy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's, up next is Lon in Miami, Florida. Lon, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. You know, this is the only show worldwide where the people really get to know what's going on. One of the biggest secrets kept from the American people today is the fact is that they had dynamite, gunpowder, even the Chinese invented the compass. That third jihad, sometimes referred to in the 1400s, that led to the Protestants leaving Europe, opening the prisons and coming to America with the deal made with the Muslims and the Vatican. That is continuing. Mm-hmm. They had suicide bombers. In fact, in France, over 50 cars a day are being firebombed or burned. I mean, it's a serious matter. Right. They just continue this for centuries. They'll stay quiet for a while. They'll start again. And one of the biggest secrets is the fact that there were suicide bombers back in the late 1400s.
Mm-hmm.
Another big secret is that once they were able to put through the American people that mosquitoes pass every form of disease.
Right.
The fact that they were able to hoodwink American people into thinking that AIDS could not be transferred by mosquitoes, mosquito bites, then they knew they could pull some more, and hoodwink Americans even more.
Right.
Because if the fact of the matter got out, then everybody would have been leaving the Section 8 housing and all the different housings that were made available, and we would have anarchy in the street. Hmm. That's why there was no rescue in Katrina. That's because Illuminati really is out there worldwide, whatever you want to call it, shadow government or whatever.
There are some folks would argue that what's happened in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast is just a land grab. They want those people off that land because they can do a lot better with a lot of poor people living some really high-end real estate all along the Mississippi coast and New Orleans.
Exactly. Another secret is about the plague. The Black Plague is caused from the pig. The bubonic plague is caused from the rat. That's why that bird virus is given a number.
Right.
That's why you never read in the paper the word plague. Because it goes all the way back, when even back to the biblical stories when the plagues were coming up. The Egyptians were the first ones to start eating pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And they, because of the Gannon Project and DNA, in the last 15, 20 years, they took a company of soldiers from World War One, checked their DNA, and found out in 1918 that actually did happen, the plague. That's where they were able to pull in together that there was a bird that got infected. That affected the pigs, and that the rations that were eaten by these company soldiers from World War One that were unearthed and studied with the DNA, and found out, this is how it was caused, and there is a fact that bird virus did cause and start up with pig meat and eating pork, and that's how when this all started up in Indonesia. If you remember a few years ago, when they were killing all the birds and then putting them in plastic bags. The dogs got to the plastic bags. They started developing. There's so much that's keeping out of the press that American people need to know. And some of the issues I just brought out for the first time to the American public. This is all fact. This is all fact. You don't see the word plague. The bird virus really is. You know, it's called. There's not just one plague. There's a black plague from the bubonic plague from the rat. And then the bird virus, black plague, from pigs and the birds that hang around pigsties and pig farms. If they're infected, the man eats that, and they were able to study the fact that the rations that were eaten back in 1918 or so, World War One, They proved it.
Wow.
And mosquitoes do pass every form of disease. And they've hoodwinked the American people into, no, it doesn't. Well, it does. Not only that, but in Africa, they're pouring silicone in the water, in the water supplies in countries out there, and forcibly killing and disseminating the populations in Africa through a genocide by just doing that. Silicone, you know?
Oh, unbelievable. Hey, Lon, thanks for passing the
information. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, buddy. Take care. Let's go to Blake in San Francisco. Blake, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, there was a guy talking about the Kennedy assassination thing a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I called in to Mike Malloy before I mentioned this book, Contract on America, Mafia Murders of John Robert Kennedy. This was written by Dr. David Scheim of the U.S. Public Health Service in the 80s, I think it was. Yeah, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically what this book is like really, really just tons of footnotes and lots of documentation. And, you know, he's got all of his sources right there for you to look up. And basically, it's mob. People talk about the Illuminati. It's actually the mob. It's the shadow government. It's the organized crime network that's really, really powerful in the Republican Party. And, and they got rid of, one of the major reasons that Kennedys were gotten rid of is because Bobby Kennedy was out to clean up the mob. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of it. And they hated him for it. So they got rid of him, and his brother. And, some of these things, you know, I think some of these things started to come out in Watergate. And I think that the buggings in Watergate Hotel were sort of like the cover story to really stop the general public from realizing what was really going on in the same way that Oliver North all over the TV was put up on the screen to distract people from realizing that what Iran-Contra was about, again, organized crime so heavily involved in Republican politics and continually using the CIA with the veil of national security secrecy and so on, that Watergate and then Iran-Gate, and now where we are now with the fake elections with Bush in office, it's just a continuation of the same trend of, of organized crime having so much control over American politics that it's destroying democracy, and they're all about money, and they don't care who gets killed and anything about human life. So.
Right. Well, there are a lot of people who trace back, the rise of this sort of shadow government and this military-industrial complex to
exactly
Eisenhower and the Kennedy assassination, and say that, you know, we have been under this cloud since then, with a few little blurbs, but yeah.
That's
hey, Blake,
what it is.
Thanks
it's
for your call, buddy. I appreciate
industrial
it.
Complex and it's mafia control.
Yep. Thanks for your call, buddy. I appreciate it. I got to go to break. We'll be right back. One more segment. A couple of callers in the queue. We'll get to you, I promise. We'll be right back.
Some of y'all never been down south too much. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this so that you understand what I'm talking about. Down there we have a plant that grows out in the woods and the fields. Looks something like a turnip green. Nearby called the poke salad. Poke salad. Used to know a girl lived down there and she'd go out in the evenings and pick her mess of it. Carried home and cook it for supper. Cause that's about all they had to eat. They did all right.
Down in Louisiana. Hey, we're back. A little poke salad Annie there. Tony Joe White. Scott in Scottsdale, you're on the air.
Hello, Jeff.
How you doing tonight?
Hey, pretty good. Hey, you know, I think that if the forces that frequently hide behind the Republicans of separation and fear keep doing what they're doing, then the issues like these three, six guys who are trying to blow up the Humvees are going to happen more often, because what they do is make them feel separated and feel as if they are the enemy, and that the whole non-Muslim part of the nation fears them, mm-hmm. and so they don't feel one with the rest of us. We've got to have a politics of inclusion and love, basically, and these politics of fear create their own intention. Fear creates what it's afraid of, eventually, because that's what it puts its attention on.
Right. Yeah, it just fear just perpetuates violence and hate, and excellent point.
Oh, by the way, I went to the Vegetarian House and met Elizabeth Kucinich last week.
Wasn't she wonderful?
Oh, yeah, she's great. She really speaks from the heart. It was kind of a small group there. I didn't get to go in the next night and see you and your band, but I really enjoyed talking with her. And
She's wonderful. She was very inspiring. Really enjoyed getting to meet and speak with her, both on the air and at the event over at the Pipefitters Hall. It's great to know that there are people like that involved in our government and involved in working for change. It was really inspiring just to know there are people like that out there.
Yeah, a whole higher level of awareness instead of crawling around in the sewers of what we're leaving behind.
Yep.
Someone said, you know, maybe the reason it was almost good to have Bush in is that we can see clearly what it is we're leaving behind.
I think Bill Maher always talks about the, all right, we've had this experiment. We now know that a dumb guy shouldn't be president, and maybe we'll learn that from here on out. We shouldn't elect presidents based on whether or not they'd be the kind of guy we'd like to have a beer with, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let's get some competent people and some of the a little brighter people in there. But, hey, thanks for your call tonight, buddy.
You bet. Talk to you later.
Let's go to Steve in Elk Grove, California. Steve, welcome.
Oh, fine. Thank you. It's you're Jeff, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. I've got a background in mental health law. I've been like a lifelong mental patient, but the liberal and progressive wing of the Democratic Party gave me legal training, and I got court orders making me the highest-ranking law enforcement official in the United States at the same time all this psychiatric nonsense was going on. It's quite a story.
Hmm.
But there was... I was told my IQ was like Thomas Jefferson. I was given a problem to solve, like something Freud couldn't do. And in 13, 14 years, I got a solution, and it puts me up there with what Einstein and and who else is? I guess it's who's the guy about? I'll forget his name. Well, Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin.
Well, you were certainly smart enough to call this show tonight.
The thing is, I was going to first time serve on a felony Superior Court jury yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the judge asking people why they were mentally ill and what medicines they took. And I went back. When it got to me, I said, well, look, I'm the highest-ranking law enforcement official in the United States by federal court order. So you can't say I'm against the prosecution. But I did win the first federal writ of habeas corpus that guaranteed the right to counsel to people without money that went to jail less than 6 months on a state criminal charge. So you can't say I'm against the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried about how you're talking about this mental illness as if this defendant now is not guilty of being driving under the influence or maybe being under the influence of the drugs that the DA is going to allege she's under. The jury's going to convict her because she's mentally ill and therefore dangerous and she can't be allowed to go. And they start freaking out. And I say, well, look, and then, of course, the judge then starts getting me, well, what about, have you ever had any mental illness? And I said, I've had all kinds of diagnoses. I said, but, you know, I went to Oakville Naval Hospital, and I saw my former VA doctor there, and he had the chief psychiatrist at Oakville tell me to never, ever take any psychiatric drugs, period.
Mm-hmm.
So my use of taking drugs was really irrelevant, although later on I got involved in going down to the state institution for criminally insane to see if I could have any credibility there. And the judges that were maneuvering this used to be my lawyers in the legal aid agency and public defenders to make sure I could get in. And I had talked to this Dr. David Rosenhan, who there was a big study in Science magazine back in 1971, and he's an experimental psychologist. He was out at Stanford, and he said he'd do anything to help me. And I think what happened is I got in there as a mental health law expert, and I had no credibility with the doctors. They wouldn't believe anything I said, but my brother brought a 10-page writ of habeas corpus that I wrote up on binder paper with a pencil inside an envelope with the chairman of the county board of supervisors from Santa Clara County.
And, wait a minute. Did you cut him off? I didn't. Did you cut him off? I think we just dropped. I'm sorry about. Sorry about that. Damn. I think his cell phone dropped or something. I don't know. Eddie in Atlanta, you get the last word.
Oh, it's Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Edie?
It's just me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How you like these hours?
You know, I don't know when to have dinner. That's what I was telling Ian earlier. It's just kind of an odd hour for me because it's 3 hours earlier on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure when I'm actually supposed to have my dinner.
Well, I'm an insomniac, so I live regular hours.
Yeah, me too. I have a hard time getting to sleep, shutting it down at night.
Well, it is hard to sleep in America today.
Yep, no kidding.
You know, your previous caller was talking about his mental health issues.
Yeah.
It reminded me of right after Reagan took office. You know, Rosalynn Carter was very involved with mental health issues when she was first lady.
Yep.
And we had lots of clinics in the community, so with you know, a sliding scale that people could go to get help for themselves, for the children. And my son needed help. He was mentally retarded, and then later on he was schizophrenic. And I just watched, one by one, all of those neighborhood clinics just disappear.
Wow. You know, and talking to my buddy Sarge here in town, it's one of the big problems facing those people down on the Gulf Coast right now. Just not enough mental health workers to help those people deal with it. Edie, I'm sorry I got to you so late in the program, but I'm out of time, honey.
It's okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling in. Good talking to you. Hey, I'll be back tomorrow with more on The Molloy Show. Actually, I got Cindy Sheehan coming on with me, and also an author named Michael Ottoman wrote a book called American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. Should be an interesting program.